This is Stella Peroni sitting here with Patty and Marilyn Bagshaw, November 25th, 2014.
Hi, this is Patty Bagshaw Simmons,
and I'm Marilyn Bagshaw.
Why don't you start out, like, tell us where you were born, when and where, and who you were born to?
Right. I'm Patty, and our parents were Marie and Sam Bagshaw, who came to Mill Valley in 1902. I was born April 5th, 1942 at Ross Hospital in Kentfield.
And I'm Marilyn Bagshaw, and I was born also at Ross Hospital in 1940 and lived our lives out in Mill Valley, born and raised, until we were adults.
Right. We lived at the home our parents built at 200 Eldridge. They built it in 1937 on a beautiful hillside lot, and that is where I live today and where I raised my children and grandchildren.
And both of us went to Old Mill School and walked to school. There were no buses. And later on went to Tamalpais High School as Alto School was being built. So I was among the first to go to Alto School. We were bused to Alto for the eighth grade only.
Alto in those days was a middle school, a seventh and eighth grade school?
Yes, just seventh and eighth. And we were some of the first to go there, and we were all mortified to leave our little neighborhood, cozy Old Mill School. We had oak trees in the schoolyard that we could climb all over, and I'm sure there were some broken arms. Girls had to wear skirts or dresses, couldn't wear pants to school until our mother got Marilyn an exception because she had too many colds, and she got to wear little wool slack outfit to school. But we had a full cafeteria with a hot lunch every day, everything from roast beef and green beans and mashed potatoes. We never ate there except on hot dog day.
And remembering the cafeteria at Old Mill School, during the war, we would have air raid drills, and we would do a drop and cover.
Wait, hold on. So this is well, obviously it's World War II, but yeah. If you were born in 40 and 42, mm-hmm. Patty, you weren't even in school for the air raid drills.
No, our air raid, we had real air raids, but we were too young. It was right around, Pearl Harbor. And our dad went out to the coast and would sit in the concrete bunkers, Fort Cronkite, Baker, Barry, and watch for the enemy. And Mom and Marilyn and I would lay on the sofa at home in the dark with our radio on, listening to see if we were going to be attacked. And we had to shut all the blinds and even put a cover over our radio so the little light in the radio didn't shine through.
Well, you were like 3 and 5 years old, right?
Right. I think you're thinking, Marilyn, of our earthquake drills.
Yeah, it was a drop and cover in the cafeteria where we went underneath the tables.
Yeah,
and
we were still had the Cold War, you know.
Yeah, it might have been the Cold War
where people built bunkers and air raid shelters. Yeah, you're right. It was probably one of those just.
I know we're not talking about your dad, but when he went out to look for the enemy, was that his job?
No, he worked for the telephone company.
Oh,
he was a volunteer to do that. Yeah, was too old to be in the service, so that was his part. Yeah. So we had rationing. We had to save our tin cans because there was very little metal. We had red tokens and because we were small children, we got extra tokens so we could have meat. Ooh. And
we line up on East Bikeville. Was at Lenzi's Meat Market? And
where was Lenzi's Meat Market?
Oh, it's where there's a home furnishing store now by Pharmaca.
Like the old Lawson and Dyer behind there.
Yes, yeah. Behind there. Lenzi's and Mr. Andino had the vegetables. But Mr. Lenzi and his meat market. So those were kind of the war years. Oh, I remember our Christmas tree. If we had a glass ball, but you couldn't have a metal hanger because there was no metal. And they were little cardboard circles. I mean, everything. Our car didn't have a solid metal roof. It had sort of an oil tarp paper type roof because that way was less metal.
And it was the headliner was really soft, and so it was a 39 Plymouth, and the mice got in there and made nests. So we had mice in the roof of the car and then down the posts. You could hear the mice falling down the posts when they scurried around.
It scared our mother to death.
And because there was no gasoline either, we'd pick our dad up at the bus. He'd commute to San Francisco. And my mom had coast the car all the way down Eldridge Avenue, Cottage Avenue, West Blythedale, and never started the car, and coasted down to what was the Green Frog Market, which is now the Mill Valley Market, and park in front of what's now the bank, and never started the engine. And she never had a driver's license until we were born. And to get a driver's license, she just went to the police station. And I think it was Captain Kinney
or McGowan.
Or McGowan took her out from the downtown out West Blythedale to the end, and she never got out of second gear, and gave her a driver's license. That was it.
Wow.
No written test.
No DMV in those days.
Oh, no. No driver's ed. No written test. No rules of the road. Well, a few people drove. You know, there was everybody who had a car, it was a one-car family. You didn't have multiple cars in one family.
Right. Yeah. Were there many kids in the Eldridge neighborhood that you remember growing up with?
Oh, we had more fun.
Who were some of your friends?
Oh.
And do they still live here? But
Scotty Mills and his brother Russ Mills. They lived at 160 Eldridge, and it was Katie and Russ Mills, and Scotty lived on Lagoma, was it?
Lagoma.
And he went to college but loved gardening, and so Scotty was the gardener around town, and he just passed away about a year or so ago. We played with Scotty and Rue, and we had one of the city managers was Mr. Almkrantz, and they lived two doors up, so we played with Linda Almkrantz. Most of them have moved away. Well, of course, George Cagwin, we didn't play with him. He lived on Tamalpais, but we had so many friends in the neighborhood.
And my best friend was on West Blythedale, and she passed away a couple years ago.
Who was
that? Joanne Ronning. Her married name is Joanne Long, and her husband and I just spoke the other day. Their house was at 167 West Blythedale, and we were never inside. Well, we only had a radio, so we could listen to Bobby Benson and the Bee Barbie Writers.
The 5 o'clock shows.
Right.
Yeah.
But we were never in the house. We left, if it wasn't a school day, we left in the morning. Our parents never worried about us. We would just leave. We would play that we were in the cavalry. We were playing
horses.
We were the Indians. We dressed my friend Holly Ring, who lived up off of West Blythedale. She had a dog named Butch, a Chesapeake, and we would dress him up like an Indian paint pony, and we'd put finger paint on him. And we would, this is when we were quite young, put finger paint all over our bodies. And we'd walk downtown like that, pretending we were Indians, and that we were the Miwoks, or a Native American species of Indian. And that was our whole day. Our parents never worried about us. They were never concerned. They figured, well, we'll see you for lunch or when it gets dark. So it was easy time.
You used to go up on Blythedale Ridge for the day? And how did you get up there? Did you follow certain trails,
we would
fire
go
roads?
Cushing Avenue, which is the next street on the right, past our home on Eldridge. And before the Riders built the big house and closed the access, we would just go up there.
Was the fire road always there before the Riders put in the house?
Yes.
Okay, so.
Yeah, well, we go up there and have a picnic. Well, the Blythedale Ridge, open space. And,
Well, we could get up there. We go on the old railroad bed up farther Lee Street at the end.
Oh, got it.
And then make a right sharp hairpin.
So you remember when the Riders built the house?
Yes, and it was. Yeah. They were kind of sad that they wouldn't allow any access for, like, what, 150 feet. And right there was our fire road, and they closed.
So they really didn't even let the, they didn't let the neighbors hike on it?
No, they were pretty adamant, and they had German shepherds, and it says patrolled by dogs, and this and that. And a few of our neighbors just lately told me that they would walk through and sort of defy them, and, the Riders got very angry with them. But that's the way, one of the ways we used to go, take our lunch and be up on the back hill, a back ridge all day. Or we would go to the Sequoia Theater every Saturday. What was it, 20 cents and 20 cartoons and a cereal and maybe, Francis the Talking Mule movie or, or Saturday night was Jerry Montezambert was the manager of Sequoia. And they would give out dishes, you know.
Did you know his son?
No,
Did he? No. He must have been
Eric.
Eric. He could have been maybe younger than we are.
Probably so.
Yeah. I think everyone's younger than we are now.
Oh, great.
You'd come home and. Oh, one thing we won, and I wish I knew where it was a blue Shirley Temple glass. It was blue with Shirley Temple etched on it. And those, I think, are valuable now, but, we don't know where
it went.
And
we never heard the news. You know, there was no instant news as there is today. Mm-hmm. We'd go to the movie theater with our parents, and then black and white, it would be movie tone
news.
News. Yeah. And so maybe a week or two later, you'd hear the news about World War II.
Black and white. Yeah, no color.
Yeah. Where were the lodges at Sequoia?
Oh, well, you would go in, and it was just one theater, of course, down in front. And then the lodges were up in back. There would be a center aisle that would go across the theater. Regular seats were down below. Lodges were up in back. And the seats, you could, sort of tilt them a little. And you could smoke there. And you had to pay extra to sit up in the lodges.
And the men could smoke cigars. And on the Greyhound buses, after the trains stopped running and the buses took over from the railway, you could smoke in the bus in the back. So the rear seats in the bus, you'd have cigarette smoke and cigar smoke, but theoretically not in the front.
So what are some of the highlights you remember about going to your high school years? Teachers, friends, special events.
Yeah, I graduated in 1959 from TAM. Marilyn and I both had Vera Stump, who was the Spanish teacher. I think Vera Stump was about 5 feet tall, quite a character. We would go in and took 4 years of Spanish from her. Oh, and we'd have our Spanish club dinners at the El Paseo. At the time, it was a Mexican restaurant. And so we can say we've been to the El Paseo.
And she had a horse
named Boy
up in Fairfax at the Meadow Club, and she invited us.
The Meadow Club? You kept horses at the Meadow Club?
There was a stable you could rent them.
Okay, was the golf course there then?
Yeah, but it was across the road from the clubhouse.
Got it.
On the right side, going west. Mm-hmm. So we rode with her. She invited us. We rented horses. She rode her horse. She lived to be over 100. But
she was a character. Yeah. Half the time we'd do Spanish, and the other half the time we'd go out and work in the gardens of the high school. She was a gardener. We'd go in and we'd see a potted camellia by her desk and some shovels. She said, okay, today we're going to go dig a hole and plant this camellia in memory of a teacher who passed away. And we'd say, yay! No Spanish today.
Well, across the street here, in Alto, and I had Don Pryor for the eighth grade when I was bused out here. And we had to go out on the hill because the school had just been built and put ice plant in to hold the hill back.
Hey, let's talk about Alto for a minute. You actually went to the Alto school, not the Ed McGuire,
which wasn't built yet.
Okay, so the Alto, when they first built it, was 7th and 8th grade, and then it turned into the K through 5?
Yeah, I think, okay. For us, it was 7th and 8th.
Yeah.
And they were cattle, Holstein cattle on the hill, Horse Hill now. And I remember one day it was big doings because, unfortunately, one of the cows died right over the fence from school. And we, of course, had to watch the whole process of removing it. But yeah, we felt like we were out in the country here because this was, a lot of people had horses down on Patricia Lane. We had friends who owned horses down there.
Who do you know that lived there?
Oh, he was a veterinarian doctor. Oh, they've moved. This was obviously a long time ago.
And Shannon Knowles, or what do they call that? Shelter Ridge? That was all cattle. And there was a white wooden bridge over, well, it was the garbage dump where Mill Valley Middle School is now, or the community center.
Yeah, both of them.
That was a huge garbage dump. The garbage man had come up to your house. You didn't have to put your cans on the street. No recycling. You could burn your garbage, or you could have the garbage company come and get it in gunny sacks. They put it in the back of a dump truck and take it down and dump it into the bay in the marsh, down in what's called the Goheen Track, like Nelson Avenue, Ryan Avenue. That was all water. And then I guess in mid-40s, those houses were built, I think, 46.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the water used to come way up into town. Yeah, but it was really, we had Mr. Raggio and Mr. Biggio, who were our garbage men. Little men, they'd climb up all our hill, lay out the little gunny sack, put our garbage in it, carry it over their shoulders, and then dump it down here. And then, of course, seagulls all over the place. Just, and then to jump ahead a little bit, when we would go out to a fancy dinner, we would go to the Marvel Mar, which is on Highway 101 by Goodman's. And then, as I'm sure all the historians know, they barged that over and made that our first Mill Valley Community Center. And that used to be our favorite restaurant. But I think the seagulls are gone now, but my daughter, Megan and Bridget, went to Mill Valley Middle School, and they were always having to duck, I guess I'd say, when the seagulls went over. And then sometimes they'd come home and their sweaters would need to go into the wash. It was still seagull haven even after the school was built. They were still thinking there was garbage under there.
Okay, you had chickens growing up.
Yes,
I think we never had chickens. We always had chickens.
Okay, did you have those for the eggs?
And pets. Okay. I'd say we didn't buy them for the eggs, or we procured them. I don't know where the chickens came from.
Somewhere, it was very rural down in Tam Valley.
Yeah.
And there were ranches down there, so we went down there.
Oh, Lola Bergman.
Chickens. Yeah, she had rabbits and chickens.
So we would just go get chickens, and then the T&M hatchery down in...
which is...
Dolan, well, El Monte.
Shoreline Highway. It's Martin Brothers.
Oh,
gravel was... and feed. And it was a hatchery called the T&M Hatchery. And they would hatch chickens. We'd go down there.
And that was, is that the same family as Martin Brothers?
I think it's the Martin. Now, I forget who the T was, but M was Martin.
Oh, interesting.
But we always had chickens, and they were mainly pets because, you know, we ate eggs. There were no... We didn't buy eggs in the store, so we would, our chickens imprinted on us, so they'd follow us around in the house, and we'd take them to bed with us, especially if we were home from school sick.
Yeah, but not overnight, remember.
But then we'd have those yellow rain slickers, so if it was raining, we went outside every day, even if it was raining, and we would look for, quote, storm damage, which there was hardly any. Because there wasn't much excavation in the community. So we would put our chickens inside of our coats so they wouldn't get wet, and they'd have their little beaks peeking out up at the collar line, and they would just hang on inside, and we'd walk all over the Blythedale Canyon and up on the ridge with our chickens, taking the chickens for a walk. Yeah. And then we pick up a dog along the way, and on Cushing, it was a dog named Bunky.
Yeah.
And we adopted him. Our mom and dad didn't want us to have a dog because it might bark and disturb the neighbors. So Bunky came home with us one day. We were sitting on our front porch, and my mom had, was it a ham on the sideboard in the kitchen? And Bunky calmly walked past us and down the front steps with a ham in his mouth. So my dad called the dog's owner, who lived up on Cushing.
Yeah, Bob Brown. That's an Old Mill Valley family.
Yeah,
too.
Bob Brown. He's still living.
Yes, he's there on
and
Cushing.
Dad, my dad just said, your dog has our ham. Like, I don't know if he wanted it back or what.
Was your dad mad or just
no,
kind
of very calm about everything?
I think he was laughing probably inside.
Yeah, our dad had a such a sense of humor, you were almost afraid to bring a friend home.
When did your parents die? I'm not sure if that's in their early history.
Oh, Dad died around 1982, and Mom died.
She was 73, so she would have
born in 1906.
Yeah, so 1986.
Getting back to your dad. Oh. How old was he when he died?
He was born in 1901, and he died about 1982 or 3.
Yeah. I think right before his 81st or second birthday.
Mom,
did they die in the house? I mean, or
at the Redwoods?
They had moved into the Redwoods.
No, they hadn't actually. Dad needed assistance. My mom died first, and so he moved to the Mill Valley rest home on Miller for a while, sort of independent living, and volunteered at the history room in the library. He'd walk up there. He became ill then, and was at Marin General and the Redwoods, because Dad was a pioneer of Mill Valley, but not a Redwoods resident. They said, we'll make an exception. You come in to our
convalescent care,
and he'd lived there maybe a week or so and passed away, so he could pass away in Mill Valley, and they made a nice exception to have Dad live out his life in Mill Valley.
But our mom always lived on Eldridge.
In Mill Valley.
She never had,
she died first.
Yeah, and well, in those days, she had an amputated leg and a partially amputated foot, so she was in a wheelchair, but my dad had just called, it's up a steep hill, about, 200 vertical feet?
Well,
up a switchback.
Switchback.
And so my dad had just called the Mill Valley Fire Department, and a couple of firemen had come up, say, my wife has a dental date, or she needs to have her hair cut. They'd come to the house, and they would carry her down this long trail and put her in the car, and then my dad would call when he needed help going back up. And my dad said, what can I give you? And they said, nothing. So he would make a small contribution to what he called the coffee fund for the firehouse.
And Mom would make a cake or something for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just.
But my dad said.
At what stage in your mom's life did the wheelchair happen?
Oh, the last year or so. She had circulation problems. So if she would get a sore, it wouldn't heal.
Yeah.
Things like that. So she was very stoic.
And my dad said, they're going to carry me out of this house I built feet first. And he almost made good that promise, you know, until he couldn't take care of himself any longer. We had to take over. But he was funny to the end. He was really witty.
Yeah.
Very, very witty.
Yeah.
He'd always say things like, well, we're going to go by Shank's mare. And I'm still looking for that definition on Google. And that meant we were going to go on foot, opposed to in the car.
Yeah.
We'll go by Shanks' mare. So it must have to do with somebody named Shanks in history, where you'd ride by horseback, because a mare would be a horse. But he'd always say, you know, we'll just take our time. We have no place to go and all day to get there.
Yeah.
That was the mode of operation.
Yeah.
Life was so calm, and nobody was as stressed out at all that as some of us are today. remembering back our elementary school days at Old Mills School, there was a Christmas tree in every classroom. And at the time, we, since it was still either during or the aftermath of World War II, we didn't have metal to spare and other resources. So the Christmas bulbs that we put on the tree came with little cardboard hangers rather than metal. There was a live Christmas tree in every room, or that is one that was cut down live. Mm-hmm. And instead of tinsel and those sort of decorations, we made paper chains out of construction paper. We cut them and glue them onto themselves and made an actual chain. We would have a program in the auditorium where we sang Silent Night and O Come All Ye Faithful and all the traditional Christmas songs, the religious Christmas songs, as well as Jingle Bells and Santa Claus is Coming to Town. And I think one of our regrets was that during my class, the last year I would have gone to Old Mill in the eighth grade, then we were bused out to Alto. So we lost the consistency of going to school with our neighborhood friendships. On nice days at Old Mill School, we'd take nature walks with our class out to Cascade Canyon and pick miner's lettuce, and then we would study how the Native Americans ate when they first were on the land that we were now occupying, such as the Miwok Indians, and we would eat it. And then we would also walk to the library, which is now a home. It's the old brick building at the top of
Carnegie.
Yeah, it was library. A Carnegie library. Mm-hmm. And we spent our summers walking to the Mill Valley Tennis Club. In those days, it was not considered prestigious to belong to the tennis club. It was the only public pool in Mill Valley, so we joined the swimming pool part of it, and we'd walk there from home out to the tennis club. I think I played tennis once or twice with some friends from TAM, but we mainly sat out in the sun and played canasta on the lawn and got terribly sunburned. There was no such thing as sunscreen. And I know one of the lifeguards, Tim O'Donohue, that name just came to me. He was all of 25 and we all were heart throbbing over him. And I know I had the nerve to ask him one day how old he was, and he said he was 25 and we were all just aghast that he was that old. So we were still at TAM. But there was a snack bar at the tennis club, so we'd eat there. And so it was pretty much our life during the summers. It was no summer school. We just rode our bikes down West Blake Canyon. At first, when Patty and I got a bike, we had to share a bike. It was given to us by our uncle. As mentioned many times before, there was a metal shortage because of the war. So we had a used bike that our father's younger brother had brought from Illinois, and his children had outgrown it, so he gave it to Patty and me so we could share a bike. We also would pick up our dad outside the bus depot in Mill Valley and drive up to Bootjack Camp, where we would have a picnic dinner and watch the sun go down from up on the mountain. So those were good times, especially on a hot night. Let's see.
I remember, I believe it was one Thanksgiving, our uncle Fred Bagshaw, who at one time was the mayor of Mill Valley. He was the mayor when they built the city hall. And then he became chairman of the Marin County Board of Supervisors. And then he worked in Sacramento, Public Works Department, I believe. So we on Thanksgiving, we went up just to say hi, and Marilyn and I were being our silly selves and went in the living room And I always remember our Uncle Fred went shh, and you know, we were being silly, and there were a bunch of important looking men sitting around in suits. And afterwards our dad said to us, you know, that man sitting there was Earl Warren. And
was he governor then?
I believe he was governor then, and then went on to be Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court. So our Uncle Fred was quite the politician.
Where did he live?
Fred and his wife Alina Huntoon. The Huntoon family owned all the property where the Catholic Church is now and the Mount Carmel School.
What's the last name?
Huntoon. And
spell it.
Huntoon, a beautiful brown shingle house with a palm tree, and they sold it to the Catholic Church. And there was a little tiny Catholic church on the corner of the property, and then they expanded and used the Huntoon property for the school.
And would the Huntoons own from where Mount Carmel is now up to the top of Hillside?
No. Just what to the next street would be Oakdale.
Okay, they own from there. And then they had the house up in Hillside.
Okay,
too.
So then it was Alina Huntoon married our uncle Fred Bagshaw. They lived their entire lives, married lives, at 315 and 317 Hillside. And they had a couple of little cottages on the property where their married daughter, Barbara Spangler, lived. Beautiful view of the mountain, and we always enjoyed going to Uncle Fred's house. Another interesting neighbor we had at our home on 200 Eldridge was Senator, well, at the time, we called him Dr. Hayakawa. He was about to become the president of San Francisco State. And it was in the 50s, I believe. And the people who owned the house, I think their name was the Marshes, had to go door to door and ask all of us, our parents, I would say, if we were comfortable having Japanese person in the neighborhood. And I believe the Outdoor Art Club at the time did not accept Dr. Hayakawa's wife, Margaret, into the Outdoor Art Club. One lady, I remember this, stood up and said, my brother was killed in World War II, and I will not accept any Japanese people, especially in the Outdoor Art Club. So Margaret, I don't know if it ever was rescinded, but I remember that happening. So our family, and I guess all the neighbors, had no problem, and Dr. Hayakawa, they called him Sam, and his wife Margaret moved into, about 225 Eldridge, and I live at 200, or our family home is at 200. And he then became president of San Francisco State, and he was noted for when there were protests, he climbed up on top of a van that had a loudspeaker on it and ripped out all the cords. And he was a feisty little man. And I always remember we wrote him a letter saying, good for you. And I don't even know what the protest was over, but we were kind of excited. And he thanked us, and he would always walk around with a little Irish tam o' shanter on his head, usually a little suit and a little walking stick, and very proper, and not a big man. But his wife, Margaret, Mary, her brother, I believe the last name was Peters, worked for Frank Lloyd Wright. And then her brother, this Mr. Peters, the architect, married Stalin's daughter. And I do remember that once the neighborhood was all aghast or excited because Stalin's daughter came to visit right across the street from us. And then, of course, he became Senator Sam, and just the nicest man, and he lived there until he passed away. And it was kind of fun. Every so often there'd be limos coming up, you know, when he was senator, and there'd be politicians and dignitaries and valets, and so we, of course, were hanging out the windows watching. And another favorite of ours is Dr. Rodney Hartman. He and his wife, Zeta, lived on Bigelow Avenue. One daughter, Harriet Hartman, is now a member of the Outdoor Art Club, Harriet Hartman Kostick, and they had a son, Nick Hartman. Dr. Hartman was our family doctor, had his office upstairs in the Keystone block of downtown Mill Valley. He would make house calls.
Wait, what's the Keystone block?
That's where Pete's is now, and there's stairs that go up, and Dr. Hartman's offices were on the left, overlooking, you know, no handicapped access. The doctor is upstairs. And he would come to the house, even if Dad mm-hmm. had the flu. He would. I remember Dr. Hartman would come in with his little physician's bag, and he was nice. He delivered Marilyn and me at Ross Hospital and was our family doctor his entire life. And then Zeta, his wife, was a member of the Outdoor Art Club. And their home, it was lovely on Bigelow Avenue. Actually, one time at our Uncle Fred's house on Hillside, I was laying in a hammock, flipped over and hit my head on a rock. So down to Dr. Hartman's we went, and he stitched up the back of my head. I think I was about 8. And all I remember him saying is, I think after 5 o'clock at night, all children should be put in a cage. So that's my recollection of Dr. Hartman.
I think one time we had a swing on an oak tree at home on Eldridge, and also I was rushed to Dr. Hartman because my dad would have me jump off the swing, which swung out over Eldridge Avenue and then back onto the property again. So I would jump, and when I jumped, my mom called my dad from the porch up above, and my dad turned around and missed, so I fell on my mouth and put my upper teeth through my lower lip, where I still have a scar. And my dad would, I think, was just home from work. He had a white shirt on and carried me down with blood dripping down the back of his shirt to Dr. Hartman's office. And in the waiting room, everybody said, oh, go right ahead. She's a lot worse off than we are.
Yeah, Dad felt terrible. Speaking of the Outdoor Art Club again, Marilyn and I took ballet lessons in the library section of the Outdoor Art Club. Mr. and Mrs. Tamaroff. They were very strict too, and
yeah,
we were not very good ballet
this
students.
Is why we're not ballerinas today.
And then our in probably late 40s or 50s, our mother worked at the Well Baby Clinic, also held in the library of the Outdoor Art Club. And I'm not sure if it was for low-cost people or anybody, but mainly they would weigh and measure. And I believe there was a nurse there, plus the volunteer women from the Outdoor Art Club.
And our mom's main, I think, interest in the club was putting on luncheons and playing canasta. And she would be found in the kitchen in the morning of the luncheon date and the canasta session, cutting the crusts off bread and making little tiny tea sandwiches for the ladies. And they had a show, they had a stage production, South Pacific, and it was the men of the club. And our dad was dressed as a Polynesian woman with coconut shells, long hair, the whole thing. And I was at College of Marin as a student, I was leaving to go to school, and there's my dad laid out on the sofa in the living room the next morning, recovering, I guess you'd call it, from being a Polynesian woman the night before at the Outdoor Art Club.
And there was a lot of rum in Polynesia, let's
yeah,
just
right.
say.
So,
yeah, there's yeah. something, gaieties or something, and all
yeah.
the men put it on, the husbands of the club members.
Yeah. Some of the stores that Patty and I remember downtown Mill Valley, pretty much the same configuration, but centered on Throckmorton, Corner Madera, and I would say Blythedale.
Miller.
And Miller Avenue. Noteworthy were Elmer and Florist. It was owned and operated by Norman Black and his aunt, Mrs. Horn, we called her. And it was the only florist in Mill Valley. It's where we went to get our cut flowers. Nothing extraordinary as we see in florists today. And they did lovely floral arrangements and did all weddings. I'm sure they did your wedding, Patty, at the community church in Mill Valley, and then at the Outdoor Art Club for the reception. Lovely Christmas arrangements made for our family. Other favorite stores was the Thran Market. The Thran Market was on the corner of Old Mill and Throckmorton, across from Old Mill School. And it was a mom and pop store. Patty went to school with Erna Thran. There were, what, about four Thran children, I think. And we hated to see it go. It is now on a corner where there are several condominiums, or townhouses, I guess they're called. But that was where we were not allowed to go off campus at Old Mill School, but after school we could go and get a popsicle or something. And we had Dimitrov's frame shop, and that was where I think there's a wine or a brewery now.
Beer Works, Mill Valley Beer Works.
Okay, that was Dimitrov's frame shop. Patty went to school with Poncho Dimitrov, and that was a an icon for Mill Valley. And there was a pet shop. Mary Ellen and Jack Green owned the pet shop in the block, this block of Throckmorton. Huge floor-to-ceiling aviary with birds. Patty and I, when there was Wilton's pet shop over on Lytton Square in the what is called the Keystone Block, there was Wilton's pet store, and Patty and I raised also guinea pigs besides chickens. And we would breed guinea pigs and sell the babies to the pet shop for 25 cents each to make some money. And then we had a pregnant guinea pig named Lily, and we were going to go camping with our family to Sequoia National Park. And we had to take Lily with us because she was about to give birth. And it wasn't allowed to have a guinea pig in a state park, but we smuggled her in, and we had to kind of muffle her when she was making her squeaking sounds. So that was another adventure. Then the yarn shop was on Throckmorton. We talked about the Nimble Thimble earlier, up on East Blytheville near what was the post office. And Downs Fashion Livery Stables, where our dad worked when he was in eighth grade. They would take a horse and buggy out in the morning, and our dad's parents, Tom and Jane Bagshaw, owned the first grocery store, the Sunset Grocery, in Lytton Square, in the Keystone Block. And he would deliver groceries before he went to school in the morning. He got through the eighth grade at Summit School and went to TAM, but during World War I, they trained students to be in the war. You did not need a high school graduation diploma to get a job, so he was never graduated from high school. I remember one day he said he was delivering groceries before he went to school, and he fell off the seat between the traces of the horses, and the wagon ran over him, over his chest. And he always, and then in his dad's shop, he, I guess, was cutting meat, and the knife slipped and went into his knee. So for there on after, he had this huge bump on the bone on one knee, and he would show everybody every Christmas and every holiday we had to see the bump on the knee and hear this story again. Oh, and then there was the time on Halloween that they took the wagon apart and put it up on the roof of the building and put it back together again as a trick for Dowd's livery stable. And Dowd's then went out of business, and then a used furniture store went in there. And let's see, the Pallet restaurant turned into La Veranda, which later burned down.
Where exactly was that?
And La Veranda was, is it behind?
Sort of by the Mill Valley Inn, right there in that area.
No, okay.
On that side where La Ginestra is now.
Yeah.
Oh, La Ginestra's been there at least since 1960 because...
They just had their 50-year anniversary.
Okay, because I took their order for telephone service from the owners, the
Sal.
Original Sal, when they first came from Italy and opened it. And I worked at the phone company across the street as a service rep and took their order for service. Let's see, Mrs. Roth's Redwood Bookshop was on Throckmorton, and that was when it was our only bookstore, I think, in Mill mm-hmm. Valley at the time. And Spasti's Fountain, that's where Ginestra is now. And it had a blue, I'm not sure if the mirror is still there, the blue mirror
so.
With Mount Tam on it. And you could get sodas and ice cream there.
And a meal.
And a meal, yeah.
At the counter.
And it had a counter. It was like a mm-hmm. soda fountain. And then on the right, which is now part of La Ginestra, was Bell's Clock Shop. And I think you, Patty, went to school with one of the Bell daughters, as I recall. And then Ginestra also was the location of Max Staley's Sanapa Farms, which moved over to where Champagne Bakery was, which I understand now is going to become a Tamil Pie. But before that, when we were little, it was Sui Keys. It was a Chinese grocery store in the 40s. Let's see, downtown some more was Albert's Department Store, where there is now, what do they call it now? Earth?
Equator.
Equator Coffee Shop. But it was a multiple-story department store in the basement, I think was yardage. And then there was the main floor and the upstairs, which I think was clothing. So it was a three-story department store. You never had to leave Mill Valley to shop for clothes or yardage.
And it had an elevator.
Oh yeah, it was the only elevator in Mill Valley. And as far as children's shoes, which they also sold, there was Mosier's shoe store, which is over where like Pete's and Strawbridge's was. And when you went in to get shoes, your feet would be x-rayed so that you would stand under this scanner and see your feet, bones. And they then could measure what size shoe you needed. And when you bought shoes, which were U.S. kids usually, that's pretty much all we wore, and Spalding buck shoes, white buck shoes, or your buck bags, and saddle shoes that we shined with real polish, mm-hmm. you would get a prize. And the prize, noteworthy that I remember, was a piece of cardboard in the shape of a bumblebee, about 5 inches, about as big as your hand, and was a rubber band around it and a string. So when you twirled it above your head, it made the sound of a bee. And that mm-hmm. was for going in to buy shoes. Dr. Hoag's optometry is still an optometry office. And he was there for many, many years. And upstairs was Dr. Seely Bennett's, who Patty worked for as a dental assistant. And the Bennett's owned that whole building. I'm not sure if they still do.
Probably the Sons do.
And the Sons do now. Okay. The Canepas now still own the Mill Valley Market, the Canepa family. Before that was the Green Frog Market. And the icon was a neon sign with a huge frog, maybe 6 to 8 feet, perpendicular to the front door on the roof, out jutting, and he would tip his hat. So as the light went on and off, the frog had a top hat on that he tipped. Let's see, the R&M Style Shop was on Linton Square at the corner where it's they're now a clothing store, mm-hmm. something about our look.
Yeah. Famous for our look.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
This was Rogers and Murphy.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. they lived, the Murphys lived out on West Blythefield. And so that was kind of a high-end dress store. That was, I think, nicer than probably Albert's. Yeah. Outdoor Club always met on Thursdays and had teas, which we kind of mentioned before. And the Rogers, let's see, Jackson Sowers owned Jackson's Beauty Salon, also kind of where Wilton's Pet Shop was, which was near where Strawbridge's used to be. And he was a hairstylist. He and his wife lived down on Nelson Avenue, and he lived to be 95 years old. My husband and I happened to be his trustees for his trust because he had no family outside of his wife, who was deceased. And he was noteworthy for his taking his antique phone collection to the Marin City Flea Market and selling down there. And he drove an old telephone truck with the fenders, the outboard fenders that were black. And then the body of the truck was that dark olive green. That was the old telephone truck look. And he owned one of those. Manny Gomez had his jewelry store on the square. Hamilton Kegwin and Seymour Real Estate Office was there. Rutherford's Pharmacy was there before Rutherford's, or right next door to it, between Rutherford's and the bank. There was a single wide switchboard where the operators sat. We all had like party lines for the phone. So when you picked up your phone, you got an operator that said operator, and then she would, or he would, plug you in to a trunk line and then plug you into another line, and you would just ask for the number. Our number at home was 1378J, and our grandmother's number was 211J. We didn't, there was no such thing as making long distance calls out of Mill Valley.
Yeah, nothing dial. You always talk to the operator.
It was talk to the operator. During a telephone strike, our dad by then was working in San Francisco. He'd been a lineman and worked in an office. So when the telephone operators went on strike, our dad would fill in as a telephone operator. And so Patty and I would go down and could observe him. Next door where Bank of America was, that was called the Mill Valley Bank. And that was owned also by our uncle's wife's family, the Huntoons. So they owned, the Huntoons owned the bank.
Property.
And then it became Bank of America. The Greyhound Bus Depot was just a bus depot. It wasn't a restaurant or a bookstore as it is now, and the buses took over from the trains. The trains served Mill Valley and went to Sausalito before the Golden Gate Bridge was built. And my dad and mom would commute to San Francisco by train to Sausalito, then by boat into San Francisco, then take a streetcar up to where they worked at the phone company, where they met at 140 New Montgomery, which at the time was the tallest building in San Francisco with 26 floors. And the house where our grandparents lived, and then our parents lived with them in the basement, is at 12 Sunnyside, and that house is still standing. It's right on the creek behind where, I guess, Baskin-Robbins used to be. So that's a little bit about when Stuyvesant's restaurant was next door to the bus depot. Mm-hmm. And and then there was a Purity Market where Tyler Florence's store is now. The Purity Market that before it became Tyler Florence, then it was Banana Republic next, I think, and then it became Tyler Florence. Yeah, I think that's how I remember it. And let's see, we talked about Wilton's, and there was always a parrot at Wilton's pet shop that we could go and talk to. And there was always like a butcher counter where you could get fresh horse meat to feed your dog. We didn't have canned dog food. You fed your dog what you procured, and dogs seem to live forever in spite of it. And the White Mill Fountain, as you look at the Mill Valley Market today on the right, where is now their deli and their wine department. And then as you turn, jump around the corner where the creek is, that was the White Mill, and that was another ice cream soda fountain. And the Masonic Lodge, which is still there today. The main floor is the Sweetwater now. Our dad was the master of the lodge in 1938. And I was a reluctant Job's daughter because that meant I had to be inside. And being inside was not my forte, especially on a pretty day when all my friends were out playing. But I became the outer guard for the Job's daughters. And in the outside area of the second floor, there's a pool table. So I taught myself how to play billiards and pool because I would be guarding the door during their meetings. And our dad played the organ. It was a pedal organ, a pump organ. It wasn't electric. Up in the organ loft, which still exists today, my husband is Mason of that lodge, and they still have an organist, and it's still up in the loft. The upstairs of the lodge is almost the same as it used to be, but now that they're leasing the downstairs to Sweetwater, they have to have all their kitchen facilities and any food they serve catered, because that downstairs area now is all Sweetwater. They needed to lease that or give up the building, since the Masonic Lodge is not financially as well off as our culture has changed. A men's lodge is not as attractive anymore to the younger generations. So the city of Mill Valley wanted to buy the Masonic Lodge from the Masons. And I think they offered all of something like $800,000 for that beautiful two-story building. And the Masons got together and decided if they leased the downstairs, which they were able to do, and then the Sweetwater Saloon, which was Jeannie Patterson's, and she had moved out from Throckmorton Avenue, also near where the La Ginestra is, and she moved down, or she was going to move down where the tool shop was, the key shop, down by Old Mill Plaza, but that never emptied, that never came forth. So she sold the name to, is it Phil Lesh who bought it? Or anyway, one of the Grateful Dead members bought Sweetwater name from Jeannie Patterson. So it's working out now. It's a nice relationship, so the Masons could keep their building. So do you want to talk about, Patty, about the motors?
I think everyone knows Tony's Shoe Shop, and we knew the original Tony, Tony Bardia, and so glad that's still there. And across the street where there's a luminarium now, it was a Richfield gas station. And then there's an office building now on the corner of Lovell, Corte Madera Avenue, and that was called the R&R Motors, Randolph and Rilla. And that's where we bought our green 1949 Plymouth. So we had a car dealership right up in Mill Valley. And then there's the City Hall, and there was a little building where the City Hall parking area is now. And just like a little old house, and it was the water district. I always remember we'd go in there and pay our bill to Millie, who was the only lady in there, and out front was a green water fountain running constantly. You didn't turn it on or off, you know, it was always running. So in days of our droughts, that's a no-no. Then, as Marilyn said, there was the Purity, where Tyler Florence's is now. Next to that was Varney's Hardware Store, which we sadly miss. And then next to that was the El Cerrito Beauty Salon. I believe that's a ladies' dress store or a jewelry store now. And then there was George Larson's Radio and Phonograph Store. And that's where you would buy radios and, in later years, I guess, tiny, tiny little black and white TVs. Next to Larson's, oh yeah, you mentioned Suey Key's Market, and that was a regular grocery store, but the whole Suey Key family worked in there, and I always remember in the back they had a kitchen and always had rice cooking or something, and old Suiki, there's pictures in the history room of him carrying his vegetables up Blithedale Canyon with the baskets over his shoulder. And we knew his daughter, Jenny, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And then, as I said, the El Paseo restaurant has been site of many different restaurants. And I remember the Mexican food in there. It was very typical, a cute little Mexican restaurant. And, and then on Sunnyside, where there is a bank now, we had a Safeway store. So we had the Purity and a Safeway. And so that's the corner of Sunnyside and East Blithedale. So we also had the Safeway. Then next to that, there's a laundromat now, and that was Roy Springett's Sporting Goods Store. And then we had the Ford dealer down where the unfortunately now closed Mill Valley businesses. And that's where we bought our 1955 yeah. powder blue Ford, and that was exciting. And you got to pick out two-tone colors, color of your exterior, interior, get a radio for extra charge. and then down around the other part of town, what's in there now? Margaret O'Leary's. We had the best bakery in the world, the Myers Bakery. Oh, pettifors and sheet cakes, and Minna Leininger worked in there her whole life, and they always wore little white uniforms, like a nurse behind the counter. Then we had Lockwood's Pharmacy, which unfortunately is also now gone. It had this huge step on scale. You could go in and get yourself weighed all the time. Mayor's Men's Store is where D'Angelo's is now. And then everyone probably knows Old Brown's store, and that was the Brown's store. They lived up on it would be McGee now. And it was a furniture store, home goods, washers, dryers. It was two floors, creaky old wooden building. It was a real department store or home furnishing store. And then I think everyone knows the 2 a.m. Club. Jerry's Market was where Whole Foods is now, in the Quonset Huts. And, there's a, what would that be? La Goma and Miller. There is now a beauty supply, a beautician there now, and it's a big building with a glass front, and that was Max Shapiro's Chevrolet dealership. And a food market where the bicycle store is now on Miller. Ida's Beauty Salon, Office Supply. Oh, and we had 5 gas stations in Mill Valley, in addition to 3 auto dealerships right up in town. I mentioned the Richfield across from City Hall. We had a Flying A at 44 East Blithedale, a Shell station, and a Chevron station in the next block. And last one on the corner of Buena Vista and East Blithedale. So we did not have to leave town for anything, and we didn't. We loved it. We loved it in Mill Valley.
Hi, this is Marilyn again, and just a brief summary, high-level summary of my history after I left Tamalpais High School. It was pretty natural in those days, 1957, that you automatically went to college in Marin. And so I drove every day. My dad bought our second car, which was a 54 Ford Custom Line. And I drove to college in Marin every day for 2 years and was graduated. And by then I had met and was dating a man who was stationed at the Presidio in San Francisco. He was a Nike officer, had been graduated from West Point in 1957, and we were married in 1959 at the officers club at the chapel in San Francisco at the Presidio. We had a military wedding, and we bought a house in Mill Valley from George Caglin.
Where was the house?
And that, let's see, we first leased one at 25 Lock Lane. That was a lease option, and then I was pregnant with my first child after 5 years of marriage, and that was 64, my first child, the second child, 67. Okay, 1967, George Caguin sold us a house.
This is George Caguin Jr.
Is George Caguin, who graduated from TAM a year before I did. Yeah. And so he sold us a house at 296 level, and where I had my second son. Before that, I worked for Pacific Telephone and Telegraph in the business office, both in San Rafael at 1800 2nd Street and in Mill Valley at 128 Throckmorton, across from La Ginestra. And then we lived there for 13. I was married for 13 years. Their dad and I parted, and I moved to the Bonaire Apartments in Greenbrae. I looked for the best school district at the time. The Mill Valley School District was going through quite an upheaval of non-grading, children writing their own contracts, and children just following their own paths. And feeling that I wanted our children to go to college, they needed to be more on track. So I found the Kentfield School District that had already gone through that transformation and had come back to more of a traditional teaching style. And I was able to get a job for the school psychologist in the district office. And then I got a job as the school secretary at what was Wolf Grade School and became Basich Elementary School, and then was transferred over to Kent Middle School when it went from a K-8 or a junior high to a middle school. So when my children were graduated from the Kentfield District and then Redwood High School District, and they went off to UC campuses, I then went to work in San Francisco and worked for Human Resources for Blue Shield of California for another 10 years. And by then I'd moved back to Mill Valley at 94 level when our parents died, Patty and Ron, her husband had lived there. And I moved into their house and they moved into our parents' house. So that was the family plan and it all worked out. Oh, and then I remarried 10 years ago to Richard Carbine, who's also a native Marin resident. He was born in San Rafael, and that's where we now live. His family came in 1875 from Ireland right to San Rafael. His father was in the Highway Patrol and was one of the patrolmen who opened the Golden Gate Bridge, who's in the picture of on one of the motorcycles opening the Golden Gate Bridge. And my husband, born in 1936, was a baby in a car right behind the motorcade that opened the Golden Gate Bridge. And I retired, and now my avocation is photography.
Cool. Hi, this is Patty Bagshaw Simmons. And after graduating from TAM in 1959, I too went to College of Marin. We called it Marin JC then, Marin Junior College, and I graduated from there. And I met my future husband there, Ron Simmons. He had attended San Rafael High School, and I went to TAM, and of course we were rivals because that was the big game at TAM, TAM and San Rafael. So we kidded about that, and we became engaged, and he wanted to go on to college, so I went to work as a dental assistant for Dr. Seeley Bennett's in Mill Valley, and it was, I believe, 160 Throckmorton. It's the building on the corner of Madrona and Throckmorton, and his office was upstairs, and I was his dental assistant for 7 or 8 years. In the meantime, Ron and I got married in 1963, and I put him through college at San Francisco State, and he became a school teacher and taught for 37 years in the Ross Valley School District. he is now retired. So I worked as a dental assistant, and then we bought our home at 94 Lovell and had our two daughters who also went to Old Mill School and then Mill Valley Middle School, and they graduated from Tam High. So their great-grandfather and their mother all went to Tam, and so we've all been part of the Old Mill School, Tam High School, and College of Marin alumni.
How old are your daughters? What years were they born?
Megan is 43 and Bridget is 40. And so then we have four lovely grandchildren who we adore and are part of our lives. Thankfully, they live close. So after our mom and dad died, Ron and I and the girls moved back to the family home at 200 Eldridge, which our mom and dad built in 1937. And Ron and I still live there today. And I just never want to leave our hillside. We have almost 3/4 acre. And just this morning, I looked out the window and there was a beautiful buck with a rack of antlers just about 20 feet outside my kitchen window on the hillside where my chickens live in their coop. And I can't think of a better place to be than on that hillside. That's home. When we moved back in, Marilyn's and my tree houses were still there up in the oak trees. Sadly, they have fallen down now. And I actually, when my daughters were five, they took tap dancing lessons at the Mill Valley, old Mill Valley Community Center. A lovely 18-year-old girl named Cece Bakelli was the teacher. And I and the girls danced with her. Cece, her reputation grew, and we moved along with her. She had lessons upstairs in what we called the port. It was Lila's Chocolates downstairs, and we were upstairs. Then the business grew, and she rented a couple of rooms at the Old Alto School and eventually bought 15 Montford, which was the old Mulligani Tire and Brake building. Had it remodeled, put in a beautiful wooden dance floor that has springs under it, two studios. And I have been with Cece, the girls as students. Marilyn and I danced there and all. And I have worked for Cece for 36 years as the office manager and business manager of Happy Feet Dance School. And I am doing that as of today. And she's not, I don't consider her my employer. I consider her my best friend. I babysat her children. They're my second family. So that is what I do now, is still with Happy Feet Dance School. And life is good. In Mill Valley. I forgot a very Mill Valley moment. My husband Ron and I were married at the Mill Valley Community Church August 4th, 1963, and that's where Marilyn and I were christened and went to Sunday school. So we were married there, and of course, as almost everyone did in those days, whose mother was a member of the Outdoor Art Club, we had our reception at the Mill Valley Outdoor Art Club. So we have lots of roots in the community church and the Outdoor Art Club. She gets
okay.
A little bit, this is Marilyn speaking again, a little bit about 27 Shell Road in Mill Valley. That building was a volunteer firehouse, and Hy Roberts, who's now deceased, was also an amateur radio operator, and that's how I met him, along with my husband, Rich Carbine. And they were looking, the volunteer firemen were looking to give the building and their bank account, which was $8,000, and the antique fire truck, to a nonprofit agency. So along with a couple of others, my husband and I spoke on behalf of the Marin Amateur Radio Club. At the time I was on the board, it was incorporated and we were meeting and operating out of Hamilton Air Force Base up on the hill where the red and white checkered tower is. So other entities were speaking on behalf of their nonprofits, hoping to be bequeathed the building. It had to be conforming with the community and offer a community service as well as being a nonprofit. So we were fortunate enough to be awarded the building. It's now used as an election polling place. It is an access for a shelter. My husband remodeled the second story and it's rented out, and that's where the income comes from to maintain the property. We do not have title to the building in that it's not worth anything to us monetarily. We can only donate it to another entity if it were ever to be up for availability again. It's on a right of way. The towers that come off Morse Hill, that is a right of way, a PG&E right of way. And there's an underground sewer line there that also is someday going to need to be excavated, which could be quite an expensive project. So right now it's an amateur radio club. They have renamed it the Marin Amateur Radio. It's MARS service. So there's an amateur radio in there for emergencies. It could become a shelter. And we're now, my husband and I are involved and on the board of directors for the Radio Amateur Civil Service in Marin, so we operate at the pleasure of the sheriff. So we're not as involved down here in Mill Valley as we used to be, but that's a little bit about 27 Shell Road.